Welcome to the FYI on Youth Ministry. If you've been with us for a while, you'll know this is a podcast where the FYI team will bring you research, ideas, and diverse stories to help you with your youth ministry. But first, what kinds of conversations do teenagers find helpful? We talked to some young people and here's what they told us.
In order to have like a good conversation, you have to like try and understand like where they're coming from. So even if it's only been a couple years since you were a teenager, things have probably like kind of changed. And so I think understanding like what's going on can be kind of important.
Honestly, take it like you would a conversation with another adult. Don't treat us like children, even if we are. And don't say, oh, you're so big, last time I saw you were this tall, because we don't want to hear it. But I don't feel like I can't ask questions or it won't be answered. If I do have a question, I will ask the youth pastor, the pastor, or one of the elders.
Don't diminuize, that's not the right word. Don't make the question seem stupid, because some people just don't genuinely don't know. Like, sometimes good conversations start off with, wow, you asked that, okay, questions. But like having like a good adult who's like loving and is trustworthy and also like has like a really strong faith, people who are like that are really important.
Hey everyone, welcome to the FYI on Youth Ministry. My name is Kara Powell. I'm the Executive Director of the Fuller Youth Institute and Chief of Leadership Formation at Fuller Seminary. And I'm co-author with the wonderful Brad Griffin of a new book from FYI called Three Big Questions That Change Every Teenager. Everything in the book, the practical insights, the questions, the stories are based on brand new research we conducted at FYI. Really, the heart of which was dozens of in-depth interviews with diverse teenagers from all over the country. And I'm so pleased that we have a real treat for all y'all today. Three of the interviewers from this project are here with me today. They're here to tell us about some of those key takeaways that they learned from the interview process, as well as help you think about what our interviews and our research mean for you and your relationships with young people. And I get to be the host of this incredible panel, which is such a joy and an honor. So let's dive right in. First, let me introduce you to someone you're probably familiar with if you've been listening to the podcast, Jennifer Aguera Aldana. She is a special projects manager with us at FYI and a co-host for this podcast this season. But today the tables turned and Jen, you are joining as a panelist. It's great to have you with us, Jen.
Thank you, Kara. It is so good to be here and experience the other side.
Yeah, are you a little nervous? You're a little nervous about what we're going to ask you?
My palms may be sweaty, but yeah. My heart is willing.
That could be a new tagline. My palms are sweaty, but my heart is willing.
Put it on a t-shirt.
Woo! I see merchandise. Next, we want to welcome Jane Hong Guzman de Leon, who is project coordinator and a content advisor at FYI. And Jen and Jane, you work so closely together on the research project, which really pulsed behind all these interviews, which is the Living a Better Story project. So Jane, I know you're someone who has all sorts of creative things you do with the little free time you have as a busy wife, mom, and leader. But I'm curious, what have you been enjoying lately on Netflix?
Hi, thank you so much for having me here. On Netflix, honestly, during the pandemic, I've really enjoyed Korean dramas and food traveling shows like the Asian Street Food Edition. You know, it helps me connect with my culture, learn about others, and helps me get out of my cabin fever.
And finally, I'm so glad that Andy Jung will be joining us. He's the Director of Church Engagement here at the Fuller Youth Institute. And Andy conducted several of the interviews from his home base in North Carolina. So welcome, Andy.
Thanks, Kara. I am so excited to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. And I know you are someone who loves sports. You love playing sports. You love watching sports. I'm curious, what's your favorite sport to watch these days?
I really do love watching golf on TV. I know that that's not normally the case for most people. They use that as a Sunday afternoon nap session.
Yeah.
I get to watch golf. And what I love about it is the men and women that play as a professional, they are insanely good. And so I really appreciate their skill level.
Well, and as a golf enthusiast, you must be able to appreciate more of that skill and strategy than I can, because I definitely fall in the category of watching golf equals a nap. Thank you so much, all three of you, for being here. And let's start with a question. As you've spent time with these young people who we interviewed from all over the country, what makes you the most excited or hopeful about what you learned through the research process? Now, that could be something either about the young people themselves or about the adults who are caring for young people. What makes you most excited or hopeful? And Andy, why don't we have you go first, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so the young people that I had the privilege of interviewing, they were so amazing. They had wonderful insights. They were courageous in sharing everything that they shared. And after every interview, I would walk away somewhat brokenhearted because of all of the things that they experienced and had experienced in life, but also just incredibly encouraged by their maturity and by their resilience, their willingness to just take one step forward after the other. And I was really encouraged by that.
You know, Angela Duckworth is a well-known researcher who's done a lot of study on the importance of grit. And we hear about that a lot with young people today, that they need grit. It sounds like you saw a lot of that grit, that young people who had some real challenges, and yet they, by God's strength and by their own character and the social support that they had, they were able to rise up and keep walking forward. So that's beautiful.
Yeah, they were really incredible. And I just had had the best time kind of getting to know them through this process. And it was a great experience.
Awesome, awesome. Jen, how about you? What makes you most hopeful or excited?
Well, I must admit, when we started this project and I went on my first interview, I always had a rule as a youth pastor that I would never ask students to do something that I was not willing to do myself. And so I've shared this with the team before that I sat down and actually sat through the questions I was going to ask these students. And I walked into my first interview a little bit nervous because these were hard, asking for vulnerable answers kind of questions. They weren't like, how's your day? Do you like your parents? It was, tell me about your identity, your belonging, and your purpose. And I was so incredibly grateful for the amount of honest answers that I got in the interviews. And I was struck by the amount of complexity that the students that I interviewed were willing to hold. And they were so willing to see things from a different perspective. That was a beautiful surprise. I expected a little bit more rigidity. And what I encountered was so much willingness to see the world from a different perspective, to hold a lot of complexity, whether it's the diverse school they went to or because of the social media accounts that they followed. They held complexity and they were willing to see perspectives in ways that challenged me to say, am I willing to be as open and willing as they're being with their world? So every time I left interviews, I was challenged, encouraged, and like Andy, I had the tears were ready to be spilled over the awe I had of young people and also the challenges that they were willing to embrace with complexity.
That's so beautiful. You know, as you mentioned, Jen, this is an incredibly diverse generation. And just racially and ethnically, this is the most diverse generation of teenagers our country has ever seen. And yeah. So I think there probably is something in that diversity that helps them be able to hold multiple perspectives simultaneously. That's a little bit harder for those of us who are older. So,
yeah.
Jane, how about you? What makes you the most excited or hopeful?
Yeah, honestly, it was just hearing from the youth. I think they were just to echo what, you know, my colleagues are saying, really thoughtful, so engaged. I'm just so surprised by how much they know. Obviously, they're exposed to more news than previous generations. And so I just saw the juggling of, you know, they have their personal struggles that they're juggling with, but they also care a lot about making a difference in the world. You know, global warming matters to them. right? Like justice matters to them. And so to hear like, wow, you're not just thinking about yourself and your struggles that are very valid and very real, but you're also thinking about how can I make a difference in this world? And so I found them to be really empathetic, really accepting, and so smart and resilient. So they give me hope for the future.
Well, you're making me want to spend even more time with young people, all three of you, and I imagine our listeners are feeling the same. So overall, obviously, you left these conversations encouraged. Let's pull at the threads of some more specifics in those conversations and see what we can learn together. So, Jen, you talked about how the questions that we asked, and we asked over 170 questions, I believe, of each student. Yeah. So that's a lot. The questions invited a fair amount of self-disclosure or vulnerability. You talked about how, a moment ago, how students were really open to sharing who they were even more deeply and more authentically and more transparently than you might have thought. So what did you learn about young people and vulnerability from these interviews?
My biggest takeaway is that the positionality of the leaders makes all the difference. What was different about my engagement in students in this process is that I was the interviewer, and I was literally trained and constantly reminded that my task was to set up the question and create an environment where they can just share openly. I was not there as their pastor. I was not there as their mentor. I was there to interview. But there's something about that positionality that I think made the vulnerability even more possible. When I was a youth pastor, I thought, well, if I share openly, then students will share more openly. And although that is true, through this process, I'm even more convinced that not only do we have to take the first step in being vulnerable and sharing about our lives, but our positionality when we listen makes all the difference. I mean, every time I sat with these students, it was about an hour and a half to 2 hours where all I did was ask questions to clarify. That was the only thing I could do. Yes, the reality of my role in the conversation was different, but I think I have pulled that experience and I ask myself, could I ask a question of clarity here to make sure that I'm getting to a more honest place? And when is it appropriate for me to share vulnerably if it's going to take us to deeper connection, not just to prove a point or to try to teach you something? And that just unlocks a different reality of vulnerability. And so what I learned is students are willing to go there. What often is lacking is a good positionality of leaders to ask clarifying questions and to express vulnerable stories only and if it actually leads to a moment of connection and not always trying to prove or teach or do something, because that's not what conversations call for all the time. And so I think that's what yielded so much vulnerability in the students we interacted with.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking back to especially my 20s as a youth leader. I'm a little bit older than being in my 20s now, but I remember I felt like I needed to weave God into the conversation. Mm-hmm. And so like that was the soundtrack in my head the whole time. How do I mention God? How do I mention Jesus? And I think on the one hand, that was well-intentioned, but on the other hand, it was forced and kind of artificial. And so I like what you're saying is, how do we be focused on a deeper conversation and really listening to ask a next really good question instead of thinking about what am I going to say next or how do I bring a Bible verse into this conversation or what it might be. So,
and what was so surprising in a good way was that I'm with you, Kara. That's a question I carried with me of like, how do we make this a question of spiritual direction, right? And students actually brought that interaction. When we asked questions about faith in the interview process, they were able to integrate it in really natural and beautiful ways. And so to trust that we don't have to always bring it up as an obvious point, but when we ask integrative questions, they will bring it in if it's part of what they're thinking about.
Yeah. Andy, I know you were also struck by young people's vulnerability. So what did you walk away with in understanding more about young people and vulnerability?
It amazed me that they would share some of the things that they shared with me to a stranger. Essentially, someone that wasn't going to try to fix them, but was going to listen to the things that they had experienced. And some of the things that they have experienced just are heartbreaking, the pains and the struggles that they've gone through. One student shared about a broken relationship with a parent. Another student talked about a suicide attempt in the family. And I had another student that talked about the grief and the pain of losing multiple friends to suicide or to car accidents. And it was, you could just sense the pain in each of these students. And I was so honored that they felt safe enough to share those things with me. And it reminded me that young people really do want to share their lives with adults, but they only do that when they feel safe in that space. And so to me, it was a reminder of how important it is for adults to create that type of safe space with young people.
You know, you've mentioned the word safe a number of times, Andy, and I know when we did the analysis on what young people talked about, and specifically with the three questions of identity, belonging, and purpose, when it came to belonging, young people often said aloud, I belong when I feel safe. I'm looking for a safe place. And it's so they were saying that verbally, explicitly, but it sounds like they felt safe with you. So you got to get a glimpse of how a young person will open up when they feel that safety that they talk about wanting so much.
Yeah, I was just grateful for the opportunity and for their willingness to open up to me.
You know, at FYI, we love to hear the observations and insights from our readers and our listeners. So here are co-authors of Three Big Questions, Brad Griffin and Kara Powell, and they're responding to a book review from one of our readers.
Hey, Kara.
Well, today we're going to share part of a review of our book, Three Big Questions, that came from Goodreads. And this is from Anna Burden. Here's what she says. I'm in my first year of full-time student ministry, and I thought that meant I could understand and relate to teenagers well. While that's not entirely untrue, what I love about this book is it gives practical ways to understand the real teenagers in front of you. It helped me break down some of my biases and gave me a greater love for the young people with whom I work. It's well written, yet easy enough to read that I couldn't put it down. Wow, thanks, Anna. That's so nice of you to say.
Yeah, and I love Anna's sensibility here that youth leaders, you know, whatever that actual role is, when we're in it with teenagers, we're good at this. Like, we know how to relate to teenagers. And I love that she named that we also carry biases, you know? Young leaders have particular kinds of gifts. They bring this sense of proximity. You know, they're close in age. Maybe it's only been a few years since they were the same age as students. And that can make it easier to understand. It can make it easier to track with and empathize with the journey of teenagers. And then there are different kinds of gifts that more experienced leaders have.
This is the category we're in, right?
You might say experienced. I like that. Not just older, but more experienced.
Yes.
And we've lived a little bit more, and we've heard some stories, and we've walked with different teenagers through their stories. And so that gives you a different type of perspective, but maybe also more biases and more blind spots, more assumptions. Whether we're that younger leader or whether we're an older leader, we can kind of fall into this trap of, oh yeah, I know what this is, or I've seen this before, I've heard this before. So Kara, I wonder if you can give us some tips for how we can avoid making so many assumptions about young people.
Well, count me in on the list of people who are guilty of making assumptions about young people. You know, I think it really boils down to practicing our listening. There's a lot of youth leaders who are probably saying, I'm pretty good at listening, but I don't know a human alive who can't get better at listening. Just like elite athletes practice their skills, we need to practice our listening. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what we tried to offer in this book is research that helps you listen, as well as over 300 questions that you can use to listen better. So whether it's our book, Three Big Questions, or other resources that you find helpful, we just want you to keep practicing those listening skills. Always be a student of who your students are, right here and right now.
Yes, keep listening. We're cheering for you.
You know, one thing I was really glad for in these interviews is that we intentionally tried to spend more time with young people of color. Jane, I know one of the things that you observed in your interviews was, especially with students who are immigrants or come from immigrant communities, that their experience of belonging is multi-layered. Can you unpack that a little bit for us? And what did you learn that will help you and all of us better minister to teenagers as we think about those layers?
Yeah, and I want to even say that we also were able to interview a few biracial students, and so that was really interesting too. But, you know, I heard stories of youth really thinking about their ethnic identities and having to juggle the cultural differences along with expectations from their families. You know, I think in many immigrant communities where the youth are second generation and the parents immigrated to the U.S., the parents left their family, their social network, in many cases, their work network, right? Some of them hired education degrees that didn't translate in the U.S. And so there's a lot of struggle. There's a lot of pain and grief that actually couldn't be expressed because they're working. And there's that expectation of, man, we're doing this for you, you know, the second gen. And so you also need to work harder, do better, be better, so that the sacrifice and the struggling isn't a waste. And so for the youth, you know, rather than just worrying about themselves, they're carrying the burden of the different generations on their backs, right? And they might also have to care for younger ones or be a role model. And so imagine the stress that they might feel when, on top of that, they're still trying to figure out their own identity, belonging, and purpose. Like, there's so many layers and expectations, not just from their family, but also their peers. And then there's like this maybe different message of what's valued, what's more important from a more Western point of view. And so they're juggling these tensions, and it's just a lot. You know, as I listen to these teens, it was a good reminder that first and foremost, we just need to accept them for who they are without expectations. Just listen to them, let them talk about their stories, their doubts, their worries, their aspirations. Because a lot of times I don't think they actually have a safe space to let it all out, as Andy mentioned. And so providing that safe space where they could just really wonder and figure things out on their own is so important. Because trust me, a lot of them mentioned, I didn't feel, you know, Asian enough or Black enough, or, you know, if they were biracial, you know, I didn't feel fully accepted by both sides, or, you know, why do I have to be kind of like the example for all, you know? And nobody can do that, right? Nobody can be like, represent a whole ethnicity or a whole country. And so that's really what stood out, is just how much they're juggling and how much they want a safe space to figure this out.
Wow. Is there one story of one student in particular that stands out to you that's an example of these layers of expectation that young people from immigrant families or communities might be carrying?
Yeah, you know, there's this one ninth grader that I spoke to, and I was just so amazed because she was the youngest person that I interviewed. And she talked about how she found a safe space in her immigrant church on Friday nights. Friday night service, she would go to youth group, and that's where she could just let it all out, right? So she's, you know, worship, message, but then in small group, she could actually safely share about all the pressures she felt. You know, there was a moment where she was so overwhelmed, she just burst into tears. And she talked about how they really listened to her and they really prayed for her. And, you know, something she shared that was really surprising, because I asked her about her different groups that she's with. So she's, you know, really active in school and in sports. And there's a lot of ways or places where you could feel belonging. But what she said was, yeah, but that's all superficial belonging. Hanging out and just, you know, quote unquote, accepting everyone, that's superficial. Real belonging happens when you can actually be vulnerable. You can really be who you are, and you're going to carry each other through the ups and downs. That's when it's real. That's when the belonging is real. And I was like, okay, 14-year-old sister, you are so woke and so aware. And this is a word right here, right?
That was her drop the mic moment.
It was really amazing. Yeah.
So help us connect the dots, Jane, because mm-hmm. I'm sure all of us who are listening want to be able to better empathize with and love and serve and journey with, you know, that ninth grader and other teenagers who are navigating all these layers. So how can we better do that as adults?
Yeah, I think just really listening to them, you know, because there's a lot of like family expectation. What I've experienced myself, also with my peers, and what I heard from the youth is you don't have that time to actually figure out your own identity, because your identity has been placed on you. You need to do X, Y, and Z. In a lot of ways, in figuring out their identity, belonging, and purpose, they can be late bloomers. I think just really listening to them and letting them process and figure it out. And, you know, one thing I've learned too is, for example, I'm Korean American. There is not one Korean American like me, right? So We each take like different, you know, pieces of our Koreanness and different pieces of our Americanness, and we make like our own mix. And so everyone, even that identity is unique and diverse. And so I think just letting the youth feel like you could still be you. Like, you don't have to look like, if they're Korean American, you don't have to look like me as a Korean American. You can be your own version, and that's okay. And so, you know, I think just, listening to them, letting them process, figuring things out, and being themselves, and allowing them to really flourish and feel empowered. And that goes for any youth, right? Yeah. But I think our, you know, youth of color or our immigrant youth, they might need a little extra dose of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gosh, you've just given such a helpful handhold there, Jane. You've given us something really important to be aware of. So thanks for that. So Andy, you know, the students that we talked to, they were nominated by their youth pastors. They all had some connection to the church and God. And we did that on purpose. We wanted to talk to young people who had a youth ministry background. I'm curious, as you heard so many students' thoughts, unfiltered thoughts or less filtered thoughts about God and the church, what did you learn that can help us better pass on faith to the next generation?
You know, when I was a youth pastor, I wanted to make sure that all of my students had the right theology, as if I had the right theology, right?
Right. But, yeah, that's flawed on a couple levels, isn't it? Yeah, for sure.
But I wanted them to think the right way, and I took on that burden for them and tried to place that burden on them likewise. In hearing their answers, it was a reminder to me of young people's natural curiosity and their desire to have God in their lives. The desire to deepen their faith and have questions about the good and the bad and the ugly of church, because we're a group of broken people together in that body of Christ. And so that really came through in so many of their comments. And it was this deep desire to have a relationship with God. And oftentimes we think, gosh, our students or our young people are not, they're not into it, or they're not asking questions, or they're not answering it with the right answers. We don't see them living out their faith sometimes. And having these conversations with young people really reminded me, they're thinking about all of those things. Sometimes it doesn't translate into the right thing or at least the right actions as we might see them, but they're thinking about it. I had to remind myself, or it was a reminder to me that, you know, my theology has certainly changed over the years as I've gotten older. You know, just letting go of that need to feel like, hey, I've got to make sure that they know or they understand, because that's going to happen over experience and over time. And I think as an encouragement to youth leaders everywhere is that our role is to really help our young people experience God in different ways. To experience God as often as possible so that they can meet God and then let God be God and allow God to do the work of forming and being with the young person, and that it's not my role to do that as a youth leader.
That's so encouraging, Andy. I appreciate that. you know, there's something about being around young people that I think almost inherently changes us. And we become different. We understand new things. We feel new things. We're motivated in different ways. Why don't we start with Jen on this question? Is there something that you have started to do differently because of these interviews that you think could be relevant to all of us? All of us can learn from you and how you were changed by spending time with these young people.
Yeah, so there's two things that come to mind, Kara. I was, part of our interview process was conversations, but we also asked students to take pictures at some point of places and things that made, that reminded them that they belonged, that reminded them of who they were. And so I think about processes, practices, and symbols a lot more now than I did beforehand, because a lot of these students that we saw, there was, the pictures were so diverse, but pictures were of, there is this frame that is up in this room, and it reminds me of this moment. And oftentimes I thought, oh, young people are not paying attention that much to what's in the room or what color is the wall. But now I'm thinking, no, for every process and every practice and every symbol that is in our youth rooms, that is in our gathering spaces, that is in our Zoom meetings, that is in our worship spaces, how can we have all of those things actually give a narrative of the Jesus-centered responses to identity, belonging, and purpose? And like Jane said, there's a multiplicity of way of doing this. But for whoever you are around, I've asked questions like, hey, when you have a bad day in the past, how have you felt loved? Because I need to know what the processes, the practices, and the symbols for you are so that I know how to show up for you. But unless I ask those, I will never know. And I was surprised at how many young people had answers to those questions when we asked. And so I have learned to ask, what does it look like for you to experience love, to experience hope? And I would shape spaces, and I would shape gatherings with that in mind, is how can we communicate the Jesus-centered response to IBP and how we do things, where we put things, and the things we look at every day, because every single young person captured those, and they were everyday common items that had a story that was embedded in them that made all the difference.
You know, part of our Growing Young research, a phrase came out of that that goes like this: people are not projects. And so for me this fall, I want to be more intentional about creating time and space to really listen to young people without trying to fix them. I think my natural inclination is to be a fixer, but that may not be what they're looking for. They just need time and space to really be able to share and know that, that it's not going to be shared with anyone else in their circle. And that they can really process verbally in a safe space where a caring adult without any other agenda is there to just to listen to them. So that's my own desire for this fall. And I hope that our youth leaders may be able to try that this fall with our young people.
You know, one comment we heard over and over again from the different youth is, hey, I've never been asked these questions before. Or, wow, I felt so heard. And even after the interview, they would say, actually, thank you. Thank you for, you know, spending this time with me. I've learned a lot about what I actually feel, what I think. And so I think really trying to ask questions that are more intentional, kind of like spiritual guidance, like we mentioned before, like, yeah, and how does that make you feel? And what do you think you really want to do? Or why does that make you tear up? You know, because they have the answers, they just haven't had space and time to process it or say it out loud. And maybe in some ways they've been trained also to just like wait for the adult to tell them what to do. But that's so unsatisfying for them, right? That's why it's like this vicious cycle. But when they're able to process and come up with the answers themselves, it, you know, it's just, it was like really amazing. I remember this one student talked about just some separation from their mom and being raised by their grandmother, and just that pain. And as he processed that, he kind of came to the conclusion, you know, I actually want to connect with her again. And he came up with that on his own. And so just be that safe space for them to process and for them to figure things out is really important. And, you know, one of our FYI colleagues, he gives a great picture and he says, when you go to talk to a teen or a youth and you want to jump in with advice or opinion, just take a swig of water. Go in there with a bottle of water and just drink that water and hold back what you want to say. So that instead of giving them advice, you could say, okay, and tell me more. Tell me more. And I think listening well is a skill that we can all work on. So that's something that I was really reminded of from this process.
Oh, that's beautiful. So friends, this season, we want to leave you, all of us, with some quick final words of encouragement. Why don't we go ahead and go Jen first?
Thanks, Kara. You know, as I read over our results from this research, I thought, well, you know, Jesus had it right when he did all of this. Because if we count the amount of times that he responded with a parable or a question or accompaniment. And so in some ways, this research reminds us to just be like Christ, be like Jesus. And when confronted with the human condition and with questions and with young people in all the glorious things that they are, may we ask more questions and respond with more parables than we do with answers.
Lovely. Andy.
You know, this pandemic season has been really difficult. And youth leaders, we know that this season has not been easy in ministry. And so I just want to encourage you, just keep loving on young people because what you do matters. And it matters to the young people that you minister to. Even if they don't tell you that, even if it isn't seen at times, know that we see you. We're praying for you and we want to encourage you.
It's great. Jane, how about you?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to our listeners. Thank you for being you and for wanting to learn and grow with us. It's truly such a privilege to walk alongside with you.
Great. And I'll wrap it up with something that one of my colleagues at Fuller Seminary has said that we quote in the book, that I'm going to be a little off on the quote, but here's the essence of it. Being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they are the same. So the way that we love is so correlated to the way that we listen. And so may we all, with all generations, be better listeners. Well, Jen, Jane, Andy, my three friends and colleagues here at FYI, I always enjoy conversations with you, and I certainly have enjoyed this one. So thank you so much for a great time together.
Thank you, Karen. So good to have this conversation with you all.
Thank you. This has been really, really fun.
Thanks, y'all. Till next time.
That's right. Till next time. Take care, everybody. Blessings.
Did you know that this episode is just one of the many free resources produced by the Fuller Youth Institute? To learn more about any of the topics we discussed today or any other youth ministry topic, you can check out our books and training at fulleryouthinstitute.org. And a special thanks to our teens, Isaac, Dania, Ava, and Wyatt.
Well, all the experiences I've had with youth pastors, you guys are the best. You guys are simply the best. You invite these mumbling teenage ding-dongs into your house and feed them Big Macs and talk about God and play board games. You're the best, and don't ever change.